Testing.
Send a sheet of paper, just send around with the attendance, Next week is the last session, and the papers are due. Unfortunately, we've lost two sessions this week and next week to go from 1939 until the present. And I mentioned a couple of times the past couple of weeks this concept that I heard from Rabbi Kessin of the events of Jewish history accelerate. So that if you look at the past 50 years, 50-something years, 53 years, much more has happened in these 53 years, most recent 53 years, than in the 250 years before that. And a lot happened in the 250 years before. But things really picked up the pace. And probably as we go on, they're going to get even quicker and quicker, as you've seen just in the past couple of years. We have to speak today about the years between 1939 and 1945, 46. The years referred to as the years of the Holocaust or the Shoah. I like two things. One I kind of began to say yesterday. In history, you have historians have a way of saying these 6 years was that, and that 10 years was this, and this 20 years was the other thing. Of course, it's not true. The 6 years of 1939-1945 didn't just happen out of nowhere. They had their roots going way back. Arguably, there's no such thing as World War I and then World War II. It's all one process. And all of the horrors of Nazism weren't just from 1939-1945. It began earlier, and it kept building and building and building, certainly from the time of Hitler's rise to power through Kristallnacht. Now, when does the Shoah begin? When does the Holocaust begin? Does it begin with a certain event? Hitler's invasion of Poland would be a likely candidate for that event. Or does it begin before? These are all fair questions, and it's really only for the purposes of breaking it down that we speak of the year, the September 1939, as being the beginning of the Shoah. The other thing, of course, is the very term Shoah or Holocaust. There are those who would don't like to use those terms for a number of good reasons. The main one being that once you name something, it kind of loses its mystery, its power. Especially if you name it with a term like Shoah or Holocaust, it's like we're saying it's this certain event. By naming it, it loses its tremendousness, its awesomeness. That's why people who went through it, of course, refer to it usually in Yiddish, either as Der Milchama or as Der Churban, which in some ways are better terms than Shoah or Holocaust. And also the people who came up with the names Shoah and Holocaust are not necessarily people whose world hashkafas we agreed with. But nevertheless, you have to have some word to refer to it. So for here, I will use those words interchangeably, Shoah and Holocaust. And we'll just begin our discussion with Hitler's invasion of Poland. And you need to say, of course, that Hitler, from the time that he was a nobody in the 1920s, had a very, very well-conceived plan about what he was going to do with the Jews. He wrote a book called Mein Kampf, which means my battle, my war, which is, he said it way back in the early 1920s, where he writes about his vicious anti-Semitism. He blames Jews as being the cause of all the world's problems. He sees Jews as being an inferior race. And he says there's no solution except to eradicate them. And he speaks of the final solution. And the final solution is getting rid of all the Jews. And of making Germany and eventually all of Europe Judenrein, which means free of Jews, clean of Jews. Just how he's going to go about doing that? Well, as he builds his followers, his generals, his thinkers, his intellectuals, begins to develop plans of how to do that. And one of those plans comes into effect in the famous 1Z, the place in Germany, W-A-N-N-S-E-E, which was a place where Germans met in the late 1930s to early 1940s, perhaps, in the early years of the war, to plan the way of eradicating all of the Jews. You have to just realize, again, at this point in time, as you know from this course alone, in Europe, and Europe means every place from Portugal on the Atlantic Ocean into the Soviet Union, there are millions and millions of Jews, perhaps as many as 12 or 13 million. And that the center of Judaism, especially what we would call Torah Judaism, is in the center of this stretch from Portugal to Eastern Soviet Union, and especially in the area of in the country of Poland, where there are 3 million Jews at this point in time. Interestingly, Hitler hated all Jews, but the more obvious was your Jewishness, the more he hated you. Not that he was very liberal with Jews who were assimilated, or even Jews who weren't halachically Jews. He hated anyone that had any Jewish birth. Even if 1/8 of your ancestry was Jewish, meaning if you go back to your great-grandparents, you have 8 great-grandparents, if one of them was Jewish, he considered you a Jew. But he especially hated what he called the Talmud Jew, the Jew with dressed in black, wearing a bekesh or a kapota, with a beard. The Talmud Jew that's what he hated the worst of all. When Hitler invaded any of the country that he invaded, he did so, as you know from general history, with a very brilliant military strategy, which was known in general as a blitzkrieg, a lightning war, which basically he used the technology that was modern at that time, which allowed for extreme mobility and real quick strikes, encircling the enemy, never directly taking on troops head-on, going around, outflanking, moving quickly, taking a lot of ground and mopping up later. And he was aided in this strategy by, I guess, some of the most brilliant military generals, military strategists in history. As Hitler invaded the various countries that he invaded,
did Hitler invade the countries especially just to wipe out Jews?
I don't think so. I think he had a nationalistic aim, but right behind his nationalistic aim was the destruction of Jews. And, as I think any historian would agree, had he not had as a secondary aim eliminating the Jews, he would have been much more successful with military operations. Because as he implemented this blitzkrieg and lightning attacks on the various countries he attacked, he used some of his manpower in the process of the invasion, as the war was going on, before he actually gained occupation of a country. But as the battle was in its heat, he diverted some of his personnel, military personnel, to the destruction of Jews. That was through a group of soldiers who were designated as Einsatzgruppen, E-I-N-S-A-T-Z-G-R-U-P-P-E-N, who were specially trained military troops separate from his regular army. His regular army was known as the Wehrmacht, W-E-H-R-M-A-C-H-T, But along with the Wehrmacht, he had the special SS troops, which were special troops whose only tafkid was seeking out and destroying Jews. And they were the Einsatzgruppen. Now, of course, in reality, the Wehrmacht and the Einsatzgruppen worked hand in hand. People who would defend the honor of the German army, which had a long ancient tradition, try to separate out the regular army from the SS. That's a whole topic in itself, the relationship between the SS and the regular German army, which is called the Wehrmacht. And the defense of many of the Wehrmacht generals was, we didn't know what the SS was doing. It's separate from us. We were just regular soldiers who fight in the war, and therefore were not war criminals. And of course, the Nuremberg trials proved otherwise, that even the generals of the regular army, with a couple of exceptions, were involved in everything the SS was doing, too. But that's a parsha b'fnei atzmo. I don't want to go into that particularly at length. So the Einsatzgruppen were groups who, as the army was rolling, as the battle was in its force, would seek out and destroy Jews. And what they would do is they would go into a city or a small village or whatever, round up as many Jews as they can get their hands on, take them out to, generally to the nearby woods, ask them to dig their own graves, and summarily shoot them. And a whole variety of other tortures along those lines. Gathering all the Jews into a shul, setting fire to the shul. These techniques. And in the process, thousands upon thousands of Jews were killed, butchered, raped, murdered, maimed, buried alive. All the misos, mishunos that are imaginable. However, Hitler's top of the staff realized, especially a man named Heydrich, H-E-Y-D-R-I-C-H, and Eichmann, and others, realized that this is a very ineffective way of killing out millions and millions of people. Because you're in the heat of war, you're in the heat of battle, rounding up Jews. How do you round up Jews? I mean, how do you know who's a Jew? How do you round them up? Many of them can hide, many of them can be hidden, many of them can escape. A moving army can't really systematically get rid of each and every single Jew. And there's millions and millions of people. So this way of just taking people out of the woods and shooting them, that's not going to really be totally effective. In one of Heydrich's famous papers, he estimated that this technique can probably eliminate no more than 35 to 40% of the Jewish population, and we have to do better than that. So there was another plan, which has been cooking up for some years, and that is the development of killing centers, of concentration camps, which were centers for killing, and a much more systematic way of identifying where the Jews were, how we're going to gather them together, how we're going to make sure we get each one, and then delivering them to these concentration camps. And a whole plan is developed to get the Jews from the small villages, from the countryside, and from smaller cities, and get them into larger cities. Contain them, register them, record them, get statistics on them, and confine them to a ghetto. And then gradually, once you're sure you have all the Jews in the region in the ghetto, then begin deporting from the ghetto to the concentration camps and kill them there in an efficient way. I'm using strange words about killing people, but this is the language that we've been bequeathed by the Germans, killing people efficiently, systematically, effectively. And then during the war, this starts to happen. And a whole infrastructure gets built, railway systems, railroad cars, personnel, special chemicals, special buildings, all special administrators of ghettos. All of this takes a lot of personnel, a lot of planning, a lot of money, and some people begin to look at, even within Hitler's own group, begin to look at him as being a little bit crazy. They're fighting a war. By 1941, the United States is also winning the war. You can't divert all of this energy to killing people, killing civilians. But Hitler, of course, never lets up. It was to his last day. Never let up this objective. It's interesting, this recently I came across an article how in a certain conference in the middle of the war, Hitler just blew his stack at the Japanese ambassador because the Japanese ambassador was letting a couple of Jews live in Shanghai and a certain place in Japan called Kobe. And he just went into a fury, which was his way, telling them, if you're my allies, what are you doing harboring these Jews? The Japanese, of course, and they said, we're busy fighting a war. You know, we to worry about the Air Force and the Navy and munitions and supplies and logistics. We can't wait that time persecuting a couple of hundred homeless people in some ghetto in Shanghai. The Japanese